Tea Words, Volume 2, by Chan Master, Sheng Yan. As rendered in Chinese, egoism means self-concern. It is not simply selfishness. In fact, to practice Buddhism, a certain amount of self-concern is necessary, for only by taking care of ourself are we able to care for others. But if we do not know what the self is, how can we take care of it? If we don't fully understand the nature of the self and how to care for it, we may unknowingly harm ourselves. Or we have difficulty helping others, even if we are truly concerned about them. We may act with good intentions, only to be dismayed by the outcome of our efforts. This is because we do not understand the fundamental principles and methods of helping ourselves. So we should first ask, what is the self? When they first encounter Buddhism, some people are especially unclear about ideas of the self. The first misunderstanding is to think that there is no self, that there should be no concern for the self at all. People like this refuse to recognize the existence of the self and the efforts it makes, even in the phenomenal world. This results in a negative attitude towards life. They will see no value in doing anything and will fail to take care of themselves or anyone else. Another misunderstanding is to correctly think that one should not be selfish and should help others, but don't really know how to do it. Such a person may try to impress those around them with ideas of what is good or helpful, but end up trying to force their opinions and advice on others. This may start with family or friends, and then eventually spread to everyone they associate with. As a result, this person may cause more harm than good. Neither of these views and the resulting behavior shows a correct understanding of Buddha Dharma. Such people do not understand the nature of the self, are unable to take care of themselves, unable to help others, and often cause suffering. They may be good people with good intentions, but their actions are often detrimental to others. This is not the way of the Bodhisattva. Many religious leaders, politicians, revolutionaries, and people with high ideals want to save the world, but end up causing strife, discord, and hellish suffering. They lack true understanding of the self and fail to understand the differences and similarities between people. Realizing this, we can follow the Buddha in his understanding that sentient beings have different dispositions, different levels of attainment, and different needs. Therefore, each sentient being requires an appropriate kind of help. The Bodhisattva Avalokitesvara is sometimes shown with 1,000 eyes and 1,000 arms. The 1,000 eyes help him understand the infinite variety of sentient beings, and the 1,000 arms allow him to provide what is needed in different situations. What, then, is the self? Buddhadharma speaks of 7 views of the self. 1. The first view is that of the body, the fundamental form that gives us a sense of self. 2. Next is the mind, the consciousness of our own existence and of phenomena, including the body. The body taken together with the mind is what we commonly called the self. 3. Third, the environment in which the self exists is called the world, which exists within a certain physical dimension, space, and a historical context and continuity, time. 4. In the 4th view of self, we have the whole of space and time, which, with the world and the universe taken together, constitute ourselves. If we restrict our concept of self to the physical body, we have only a narrow view of thinking and identity. When we extend the concept to include the mind, then the idea of self broadens, and if we expand it even further, we may include the universe, all space, and time. But even at this level of conception, the idea of self is still limited to the material world. 5. With concepts no deeper than the material world, we will be unable to enter the 5th level, the realm of the religious or spiritual idea of the self. According to Buddhism, sentient beings are not restricted to a single lifetime. Rather, all sentient beings pass through a series of lives before and after this one. What engenders these succeeding lifetimes? It's what we call karma, or the causes and consequences of our thoughts and actions. This includes all actions of our body, speech, and thought. It is these actions and their consequences that continue through different lifetimes as karmic force. This is the Buddhist conception of the self, and it can give one a sense of an eternal self. If we restrict the self to a single lifetime, a sense of an eternal self would be impossible. To the understanding of successive lives, we must add an understanding of the essence of Dharma. Buddha Dharma teaches us to liberate ourselves from our karma, and to help liberate others as well, because self and other are not really separate. Therefore, liberation of self and all others is really the same thing. 6. We must make vows to apply ourselves to that end if we would realize true liberation. Such vows determine the value and meaning of our lives. Thus, it is that we talk about a sixth level of self, where we vow to liberate ourselves and others. But this is still not the ultimate level of Buddha Dharma. 7. The final stage is selflessness, or formlessness. When we say that the ultimate stage of Buddha Dharma is selfless, we do not mean that the individual self is completely gone. We mean that the person is free of vexations, liberated from karmic attachments. He or she is liberated from self-centeredness, but the function of wisdom and the results of compassion continue. For such people, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the self has no existence. Ordinary sentient beings may regard liberation in and of itself as the self associated with Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. We can still pray to the Buddhas and gain benefit from them, but in their perspectives, there is no self whatsoever. The 6 previous levels cannot be regarded as having ultimate truth or existence, because in becoming liberated, it is necessary to make vows to break through these levels. Buddhas no longer need to make vows. There is no such thing as karma for them, and so it's not necessary to speak of the existence of self. For Buddhas, these terms are meaningless, but we sentient beings can still derive great benefit from the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Returning once again to the first 2 views of self, those of body and mind, in the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment, we read, "When the 4 elements combine, the body appears, and the conditioning of the shadows of the 6 sense objects constitutes the appearance of the mind." What does this mean? The 4 elements are earth, water, fire, and wind. They are considered to constitute all matter. The first part of this statement, then, says that the body is formed when matter comes together in a certain way. But there is really nothing that originally constitutes the body. It is only a combination of the 4 material elements that we call the body. The conditioning of the next line refers to attachment and discrimination in relation to sense objects, feeling, seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Sense objects are not as substantial as material objects. They are merely the shadows of matter. Thus, the mind arises through attachment to and discrimination of the shadows of material things. This also indicates that originally there is no such thing as the mind. It is only the interactions of the 6 sense objects, which are themselves products of interactions, that we call mind. The next and 3rd level of the self, what we call the world, is the immediate environment for the activities of the body and mind. We should not think of it simply as the planet Earth. Rather, we should understand that everyone has his or her own world. This not only applies to people living in different parts of the Earth, but even to members of the same family. A teenager with a room full of posters of movie stars and singers might live next to a sister whose walls are covered with pictures of Jesus and Mary. The brother down the hall might have posters of famous athletes, or maybe even the picture of a Dharma master. There is a Chinese saying, even a couple sleeping in the same bed will have different dreams. Thus, under the same roof, there may be people who feel like they are living in the Western paradise, while others feel like they're living in hell. This is what we find in my temple in Taiwan. Some people seem like they're living in the Pure Land, while others seem to suffer the vexations of hell. This shows the broadness of perspective and acceptance in Buddhism. It is enormously encompassing because it recognizes that sentient beings are so different, with different characteristics and dispositions. What we call the universe in the fourth level incorporates both space and time. In terms of space alone, all of us are connected. The Chinese used to say that when Mao Zedong coughed, the world worried because he had so much power. But is it really true that when anyone on the planet coughs, everyone else in the world is affected? It's only a matter of degree. If I cough, you might only think, I'd better be careful. I could catch something. We all live on the same planet and breathe the same atmosphere. So it is true, to some extent, that what happens to one of us affects us all. Just look at the problems that we have with the environment. Like space, time connects us all. Life did not begin when your mother gave birth to you. Your parents also had their parents before them, and so on, all the way back to the first appearance of life on Earth. And many of you will have children and descendants for generations to come. I will not have children to come after me, but I have my disciples. And all of our culture and civilization was passed down to us from previous generations and will continue after we are gone. Whether we are famous or not is irrelevant. Our participation and impact on the world cannot be denied. We see that our personal lives and the whole universe cannot be separated. If you understand this, then when you think about being selfish, you should ask, selfish for what? And selfish for whom? The self, body, and mind are inseparably linked to the entire universe, space, and time. Selfish? Time and space are too wide. If you wish to be selfish, include the entire world in your thoughts. If we go on to the fifth level, the spiritual self, the Buddhist teachings make it clear that throughout all of our successive lifetimes, there is an unbroken thread of self known as karma. Karma dictates that if we do good things, then we will experience joy and peace in return. Bad actions, we will bring suffering and vexation. By good things, we mean concern for and helpfulness toward others. Even from a selfish viewpoint, it makes sense to do more good than bad, just for your own benefit. You may believe you gain at another's expense, but the law of karma will ensure that you pay back what you owe. Taking advantage of or harming others is analogous to borrowing money. Not only will you have to pay back the amount borrowed, but there is a high interest to pay as well. Thus, even for purely selfish reasons, you don't want to hurt others. You only want to do virtuous things. In Buddhism, the most important element of the self is the karma it has accumulated. With the logic of karma, then, the only way to be selfish is to care for others. This understanding of karma brings us to the sixth level, where concern broadens beyond simply the redemption of one's own karma. At this point, you adopt the Bodhisattva spirit and make vows to dedicate your life to the benefit and salvation of all sentient beings. Your sole concern is others. Through the power of these vows, you dwell among sentient beings, offering them all of your wisdom and strength. This is truly saving the world and helping sentient beings. It is only possible for someone firmly grounded in and deeply committed to Dharma. Most people are not ready to work only for others with no thought of gain. But if you truly understood karma, you would act in this way. Then rather than be driven by karma, your own vows would be the motivation and driving force of your life. This is a much better and safer path. This is the difference between the power of karma and the power of vows. The power of karma derives from the previous level, the basic teachings of Buddha and the three lifetimes. Karma is self-centered. Vows are others-centered. If you can truly perform compassionate acts without thought of your own benefit, you gain a much greater reward than if you had been thinking of yourself in the first place. But making vows and persisting with them is not so easy. Many people make great vows when they first begin to study Dharma. Sometimes, I'll see one of these people a few years later and ask, "Are you working on your vows?" I often hear, "Maybe I'll fulfill those vows next lifetime. There's too much karmic obstruction now." Or I may hear, "The vow I made was unrealistic. I couldn't live a normal life and keep such a vow. I feel like a hypocrite now." Even if your vows are unrealistic or less than sincere, it is still important that you make them. It is important to continue and persist in making vows, even if you fail in them 90% of the time. That is still better than making no vows at all. When you make them, you can tell Buddha, "These vows I'm making are not sincere, but I'm saying the words anyway." It's better making phony vows than to be out committing crimes. Make no vows, and you increase the chances that you will do wrong. By the same token, the simple act of making vows increases the chances that you will be virtuous. Without vows, our lives are like leaves floating aimlessly on a river. A person without vows drifts on the ocean of death and rebirth, which we called samsara. But once we make vows, we have direction. It might not be smooth sailing at first, but at least we know where we are going. When babies begin to walk, they may begin slowly, but little by little they get stronger, until the time when they leap and run. Nobody is born a marathon runner. Likewise, first vows are difficult to keep. That may seem obvious, but it's important to remember. You should not worry that breaking the vows and precepts might add to your bad karma. It is still important to make vows. If you break the vow later, acknowledge what you did was wrong, repent, and make sure you don't do it again. Then make the vow again. We talk about making vows, but what vows should we make? I'd like everyone to make vows to help others, including vows to come to the Chan Center to do volunteer work. Even if your vows are not genuine, that's fine. Essentially, we should vow to let go of our self-centeredness and to assume responsibility for the welfare of other sentient beings. Only when you can truly put down self-centeredness through the power of your vows will you reach liberation, the seventh stage of self. Many people are unwilling to let go of their self-centeredness, yet they want to be liberated. That is impossible. So I do hope that you all will make vows. 10 years ago, there was a young woman who made a very great vow after sitting a few retreats. She vowed that lifetime after lifetime, she would follow me to deliver sentient beings. That is a wonderful vow. I was quite pleased and thought, here is somebody to succeed me. A few years later, she married and never came to the temple again. One day, I saw her. When she saw me, she tried to run away, but I cornered her and said, "What happened to your vow to help me deliver all sentient beings?" She said, "Well, I've already delivered one. Isn't my husband a sentient being? I tried to deliver him, and that's why I got married." "What are you doing now?" I said. "You never come to the temple." She answered that, "I'm not done helping my husband yet. When he is ready and willing, I'll bring him to the temple." It's already many years since I saw her, and I have no idea how well she is doing delivering sentient beings. But if I see her again, I'll tell her not to give up and to keep making vows. The fact that you are married in this lifetime is irrelevant. You must continue making vows lifetime after lifetime to help all sentient beings. Married or not, male or female, it's not important. What is important is to make vows.